Today on Straight Talk Africa, constitutional reforms and presidential term limits. Why are many African presidents unwilling to respect their constitutions when their social contract ends? Presidential term limits are fundamental to people's quest for freedom, dignity, and democracy. We'll have that conversation coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, December 17th. I am Shaka Salih.
And I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter. Hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. Glad you can join us today.
Today, we'll talk about the urgent need for fundamental constitutional reforms and presidential term limits on the African continent.
It's a topic that has created a lot of buzz on social media, on our social media platforms, with all sorts of comments that we can't wait to share with you. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, in the next few years, several African presidents are poised to reach the end of their terms. Many in opposition are concerned that attempts by some presidents may already be underway to circumvent the rules and amend the constitutions so that they can stay in power. My colleague Paul Sisco has more.
The 27-year rule of former Burkina Faso President Blaise Compaoré came to a crashing end 2 months ago when debate began in the National Assembly to scrap presidential term limits. French President François Hollande told African leaders at a recent summit that Burkina Faso should serve as a warning to other leaders that try to modify their constitutions.
Those leaders who want to hang on to power by violating constitutional order should think first about what happened in Burkina Faso, because it's the people who decide.
Since 1990, at least six sub-Saharan presidents have successfully rewritten the constitution to do away with term limits. Those nations are Chad, Gabon, Guinea, Namibia, Togo, and Uganda. Similar efforts failed in Malawi, Nigeria, and Zambia, and Niger in 2012, where attempts by President Mamadou Tandja to extend term limits resulted in a coup. Presidential elections are on the horizon in 2015 in Nigeria, Togo, Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Cote d'Ivoire. Joseph Kabila's term as president of the Democratic Republic of Congo ends in 2016. There's speculation that he will seek a constitutional change to run again. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry.
I encourage President Kabila to work with his government and the parliament in order to complete the election calendar and the budget. And they need to do so in accordance with the Constitution.
At 72, Congo's President Denis Sassou Nguesso is past the age limit provision, but his party is proposing a constitutional change for the 2016 vote. Rwandan President Paul Kagame's two terms expire in 2017, and the political opposition believes, and Kagame himself has suggested, that term limits will not keep him from leading Rwanda.
I am going to do the right thing because it is the right thing, not because anybody is telling me to do.
Democratic leaders, scholars, and political analysts warn that adherence to constitutional provisions are vital to a thriving democracy.
History is on the side of these brave Africans, not with those who use coups or change constitutions to
stay in power.
Africa doesn't need strong men. It needs strong institutions.
African leaders with more than 30 years in power include Equatorial Guinea's Teodoro Obiang Nguema, Eduardo dos Santos of Angola, Cameroon's President Paul Biya, and President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe, who turned 90 in February, claimed his seventh term last year. Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni took power in January 1986 and had term limits removed in 2005. Now he's showing every sign of running for a seventh five-year term in 2016. African political analysts say across the continent the public is losing its tolerance for bad governance. And while attempted constitutional manipulations by dominant leaders and parties are trending upward, so is the determination of young Africans and others to stand up for the democratic process. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Now joining us here in our Washington studios is our distinguished guest, Professor Kenneth Mwenda, adjunct professor of law at American University's Washington College of Law, based here in the nation's capital. Well, Professor Mwenda, I have to say, of course, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have another opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Most welcome, Shaka. My pleasure.
Some things that the audience may not know about you is that, in fact, you happen to be an Oxford Rhodes Scholar.
Thank you.
A very prestigious fellowship, especially here in the United States of America.
Yes, indeed. I was a student in Oxford almost 22 years ago as a Rhodes Scholar. And, still have fond memories of the place.
So you are in the same class like Bill Clinton?
Yeah, in fact, one of the governors of the southern states, Bobby Jindal.
Yeah, that is correct.
Yes, we were Rhodes Scholars in the same cohort.
Louisiana.
Yes, Louisiana. We're Rhodes Scholars in the same cohort.
People like Susan Rice?
Indeed, she was a Rhodes Scholar. Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. And Eric Kashambuzi, a former United Nations senior management official, he is currently a consultant for New York University's Center on International Cooperation. He joins us from our United Nations studios. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Kashambuzi.
Thank you for having me.
A man, of course, that shares the same alma mater with yours truly, Kigezi College Butoveri. Is that correct?
That's correct.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, Eric.
Thank you very much.
Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Kenneth. Give us an update about the developments in your own country,
Zambia. A lot of things are happening down there, Shaka. Just this afternoon, I got a sort of an email with an attachment of an official statement, purportedly or allegedly an official statement from the vice president, who is now acting president, that he will not be stepping down after a call from, I think, 14 cabinet ministers from the PF who had asked that he steps down. There are a lot of constitutional questions that come up, but frankly speaking, I think the acting president is within the law. Mm-hmm. He has a firm interpretation of the law. There's no doubt about it. People can question the motive or intent behind the actions or the decisions, but he's within the premise of the law. There's no provision in the Zambian Constitution 1996, as far as I can recall, that allows cabinet, for example, to impeach an acting president. You can impeach parliament, not cabinet. You can impeach a sitting president, but there's no provision for an acting president to be impeached. And even then, it has to be parliament, not cabinet.
But these are his colleagues. Why is it that they want him out of the way? Is it because there's an apparent split within the ruling party?
There is a split. If you look at the candidates who had lined up to stand for president of the political party, there were a number of candidates, including the widow to the president, Dr. Christine Kaseba, his nephew, Miles Sampa, and I think his son pulled out of the race. So from the first family alone, there were quite a number of candidates that were coming from there. And then, of course, you have the other camp, which is led by former Minister of Justice, Lungu. But I think over and above, one could attribute this to a highly personalized cult around the late president, Mr. Michael Sata. May his soul rest in peace. He was the sort of magnet that brought them together. In his absence now, it's like, you know, you slaughter the shepherd and the sheep don't know where to go.
Really? What about the constitution, which some, in fact, refer to as perhaps a personal manifesto? Because if it was a constitution, it would seem, frankly, that Guy Scott would, in fact, be president, serving the remaining of the term of his former boss.
Yes, there's under the Zambian constitution, if you look at eligibility for presidency, Guy Scott does not qualify to be elected as president. And he is aware of that. There's no dispute about that. But however, as vice president, he immediately takes on the mantle to to run as acting, to sort of be in office as acting president for the next 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering really why the hesitation by people trying to ask him to step down when we only have about 80 days left.
Honestly,
I mean, 80 days, what is it to be worried or scared of in that 80 days? You know, you just have to be patient.
Maybe that creates a window of an opportunity for someone from the opposition party.
Indeed. Actually, the PF will have themselves to blame if they lose these elections. I think President Sata had built a very strong party. He left them a good legacy. But the internal fighting is actually making the opposition appear to, you know, have a window of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
The PF definitely will have themselves to blame.
Eric, what about you? In as far as this business of fundamental constitutional reforms and indeed term limits, what are your views on that?
Well, my views are that a constitution can be amended, that is constitutional, but it has to follow certain procedures, and in many cases, those procedures are not followed. For example, in the case of Uganda, it was followed. We understand that some members of parliament were bribed, were corrupted, were compromised, and that is something that should not be accepted. A constitutional amendment must be transparent. People must participate at all levels. And the reasons for making that change must be made clear. When a president decides to change term limits, it means that he has got personal interests at heart, and that is something that perhaps should not be allowed. And in the case of Uganda, they didn't only limit the term limit to 3 terms, but it's open-ended, and the president can contest as many elections as he wants, and that's why he's now planning to continue for another term after 2016. And I think the people of Uganda and our development partners should not allow that to happen.
You are talking about Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, who, of course, has been in power for 28 years. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You raised the issue of the possibility of having parliamentarians having been bribed. But the president himself actually said, no, they were not bribed. They were rather, in his words, facilitated. Each of them about $3,000. Facilitation.
I think that is playing with words. I did not expect the president to say that he bribed the members of parliament. So he came up with facilitation, but facilitation could have meant to change their minds in the direction that he wanted, and that's what turned out to be the case. And I think the entire population was opposed to it, but he pushed it through this facilitation mechanism, and I think we have to understand what those words mean so that the people don't get confused and get wrong things passed. And I think in the case of Uganda, whether you call it facilitation, whether you call it bribing, I think the end result was not worth it.
What about the fact that anybody elected to the highest office in their land, his major role is to, first of all, protect, defend, and respect that document, the Constitution?
That is the requirement. But what we get most of the time is that the Constitution is always amended. They give all sorts of reasons, but when you look at it, you find that the main purpose of amending the Constitution is 2 things. First, to give the president or the head of state more power, and to change the term limits. And this is what we have seen. When you look at the 1967 Constitution in Uganda, it combined the office of the president and the office of the prime minister into one office of executive president, and that gave him more power than he would have had if we had retained the post of the president and the post of the prime minister. So while they are required to protect the constitution, they end up not doing so. And as a result, the rights and freedoms of the people are violated. The presidents put themselves above the law, which shouldn't be the case. And that creates a problem. And eventually, you end up with some disturbances, resulting sometimes in the military coups, as we have heard earlier in this program.
Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. We are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Term Limits. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Let's take a quick look at presidential term limits in Africa. Opposition officials in Togo are set to protest if President Faure Gnassingbé refuses to implement reforms that will lead to a presidential term limit and free and fair elections. In March, the Burundian parliament narrowly voted down a series of constitutional amendments that would have removed presidential term limits. In 2013, Zimbabwe voters passed a new constitution, setting a maximum of 2 5-year terms for the president, starting with the next election. It's not retroactive, so President Robert Mugabe, if elected, could rule for another 2 terms.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
The people of the nation, the best thing that they can do is to try as best as possible to cooperate with the health authorities and to listen to and adhere to the suggestions and guidelines. We appreciate that this is something that is really awful to be going through. We're with you, we have solidarity with you, and hopefully we'll be able to end this terrible epidemic very soon.
That was Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, speaking to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizui. Now, Kenneth, let me come back to you. There have been remarks made by the Rwandan President Paul Kagame, and I quote, "I do not know a single country where the constitution is immutable." Isn't he right on the money?
Theoretically, yes, he's got a good point. But in practice, one would ask, what is the motive behind some of these constitutional amendments? If you look at the U.S., for example, the tradition in the U.S. started with George Washington. George Washington, at that time, there were no term limits in the U.S. Constitution for a president. So he only went for 2 terms and, you know, he said he will not recontest.
Despite a call from his supporters that, in fact, he should be a monarch.
Exactly. So George Washington set a precedent, but there was nothing written in the U.S. Constitution that it's a 2-term limit. It only came about after FDR, Franklin Roosevelt. He went for 4 terms. He was elected for the 4th time.
Yeah, he died.
And when
he died, the
Republicans regained the majority in Congress and then enacted the law which says, no, you will have only 2 terms as a sitting president in the United States of America. So the U.S. has gone through what we've gone through. But I think the distinction with us, especially on the African continent, is that there's a strong tendency to try and replicate chieftaincy into presidency. You know, if you look at, you know, objectively speaking, the generation of the current leaders, you know, our generation, we are not far removed Our immediate parents or grandparents were in the village.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not a generation far away from the village. So even the concept of chieftains is still with us, even if we are educated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, change from old into new doesn't entirely bring new properties altogether. There will be certain attributes of the old. So you see a little bit of those nagging things that are coming from the concept of chieftains into the presidency.
Mm-hmm. So why don't they, in fact, come out and say, you know what? I am not a president. I am a chief, or I am a king. I am an emperor. Let's not waste resources, you know, taking you through the motions that you're having an election, because, in fact, it is a selection.
In fact, that's a very good point you've made, Shaka. We have Western institutions and concepts of democracy being introduced into an alien culture, political culture. So there's a struggle, you know, to try and adapt to some of these concepts. Concepts of universal suffrage, voting for a person. You know, these are things that are not there for a chief. A chief, you don't vote a chief into office, and you don't ask a chief that has only got a term of office.
Right.
So we are struggling with these concepts, trying to adapt to Western concepts. I know it's been, for some countries, 20, 30, 40 years after independence. But we still have a bit of that mentality of the chieftaincy in our presidents.
In fact, the Ugandan president, for him, he is very, very free to say, for example, that he is Sebagabe. Omugabe in Uganda, especially in Ankole, where he came from, there was a kingdom, right. Is the king of the Banyankore.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you put the various kings in Uganda, he's telling you that he is above all those kings. He is Sebagabe.
Right.
So isn't he politically really a sort of presidential monarch?
Yeah. In a way, one would look at it from that perspective. But again, like I said, on the one hand, there are traditional values of African chieftaincy. On the other hand, we have Western concepts of democracy. And we are trying to bring these two together. So it's all messed up in one pot. You know, you're cooking fish, chicken, beef, everything in one pot.
Mm.
And then you're struggling. Then we have constitutions where we borrow a lot of traditions from all over the place. The American system is a federal system. The British system, for example, is a unitary system. In the UK and in the US, they both have what we call a bicameral system of parliament. And here, where you have two legislative chambers. If you look at a lot of African countries, we just borrow concepts, even the concept of doctrine of suppression of powers, Montesquieu's theory on doctrine. We try to borrow these concepts, but then we have a convoluted outcome at the end of the day because, you know, we want to have our own sort of homegrown constitutions to reflect our own value systems.
But what about the fact that each president is elected, frankly, first and foremost, to protect, defend, and respect the Constitution? Is there no way you can bring about a mechanism that prevents the incumbent to personally or politically benefit from amending a constitution while in office?
Good point. Ideally, we're now looking at issues of political realism versus political idealism. Ideally, that is what the constitution says. But in reality, the president, as commander-in-chief of the armed forces, as executive of the state, is in control of the state apparatus, state machinery. So that gives him a very privileged position, and that is why previously on the show I was saying it's very difficult even to investigate a sitting president despite the fact that he enjoys immunity from prosecution. You take him to the ICC, International Criminal Court, the authorities in the country will not cooperate to give evidence because he's a sitting president until he leaves office. So once he's in power, he's in that position, it's pretty difficult. And one other thing we need to understand that most of these presidents build a cadre of cronies around them.
Sycophants.
Yeah, sycophants. And these are people who are going to tell you lies that, you know, you're the only one who can do this. If you leave, you leave us as orphans.
But obviously the lies that you would like to hear.
Exactly. They'll tell you, though, because they also need to stay in power. And that's what happens.
So you become like a company of sorts,
corporation. And the president, ultimately, if he doesn't have a very good intelligence machinery that is feeding him with the right information, begins to have illusions about how indispensable he is.
Interesting. He begins to say that perhaps he's the only person who has the vision to think.
Right.
The only person who can, in fact, think an entire nation. Let's go to the lifeline of the program, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick from the great nation of Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Patrick, can you hear me?
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Shaka.
You're terrific. How are you today?
So, Mr. Shaka, before I then Merry Christmas in advance.
You too, my brother. You too, and a Happy New Year.
Thank you. God bless you. You see, Mr. Shaka, the changing of constitution by our African president always results to this mayhem and wanton destruction. And if you look at the situation, you see that increased unemployment, the high rate of poverty and corruption. Now, my question to our guests in the studio this evening is, why is it that the parliamentarian always back the president to change the goalposts? Because if the parliamentarians are not in support of the president, the changing of the goalposts, that the constitution, will not be possible. It will check well, because this one is no longer book work. It's now monetary work. Is it true or false? Thank you very much, and have a blessed day.
Thank you very much. What do you think about that, Eric? Patrick has a point, especially because in his own country of Nigeria, one General Olusegun Obasanjo, retired but certainly not tired, attempted to shift political constitutional goalposts, and the Nigerian parliamentarians stopped him in his track. They refused. Why can't that be done or replicated across the continent?
That's a very good question. But as for the case of Nigeria, I think it depends upon the institutions in place and upon the orientation of the people. And as you said, in the case of Nigeria, Obasanjo wanted to change the term limits, but the people stood firm and he was not successful. And in some places, even where it has been changed, like in Senegal, the people voted the president out of power. So I think it depends upon the institutions in place, upon the awareness of the people. And if that could be replicated, then we should put an end to these malpractices. For example, let's take the case of Tanzania. I have been talking to Tanzanians, and they believe that there's no way a president can change the term limits in order to stay in power, because they are aware of their rights and freedoms. The parliamentarians are aware. The institutions are so strong that they cannot do that in Tanzania. But you have situations like in Uganda, where the president thinks he owns the country and he can do whatever he wants. As you recall, there's a time when they wanted him to step down, and he said, as a freedom fighter, he cannot be chased out of power like a chicken thief who can be chased out of the house. So we have these mentalities, and the people of Uganda, I think, need to realize that they have got rights and they can stand firm and object. But as I talk with people around, I think they are beginning to accept the notion that a president should not do what he wants. He must be governed by the laws of the country. No individual is above the law, and it depends upon the people in a particular location to make sure that the president does not act as he wishes.
Very interesting. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our conversation in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. And a reminder that you can participate in this conversation by posting on our Facebook page or tweeting us using the hashtag VOA Term Limits, or simply by emailing us. We'll be glad to share some of it in this program. Meanwhile, here is our letter of the week.
Robin Olikai from Mikocheni in Tanzania writes, "First, citizens must be given an opportunity to state their opinion on significant issues that impact their lives. Second, the sovereignty of the state must be a paramount issue that is included in the Constitution. Third, a constitution must highlight human rights issues, the rule of law, and transparency in leadership. Lastly, the state legislature must be given enough power to make important changes that affect the people."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. A new constitution sets and sustains a foundation for democratic governance and provides for a balanced distribution of power for a nation. However, it can also serve as a solution to political and developmental challenges. This leads us to our question of the week, trying to find out, in your view, what are the fundamental issues that must be addressed when amending a constitution so that it reflects the will of the people? Well, you've had a lot to say, so let's begin right away with a comment from Peter Celia from Zambia, who writes, "All amendments should be subjected to a referendum so that the will of the people prevails, not the party in power." Well, another reminder that we are tweeting live today and use the hashtag VOA Terms Limits. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Bader Rinwa, who writes, "It's most unfortunate that most African leaders intentionally commission projects at the tail end of their tenure." Well, Shaka, what do you make of these comments?
Very interesting. Of course, what about you, Kenneth?
We've seen these developments. Taking Zambia, for example, towards the end of his term of office, second term, President Chiluba in Zambia, there were rumors that he was trying to push for a third term.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, President Sata at that time was in his cabinet, and he was one of the people who were encouraging Chiluba to move ahead with a third term until Chiluba anointed somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Then Sata rebelled and formed his party.
But how did the civil society in Zambia, how was it able to stop Frederick Chiluba in his tracks?
He was definitely not going to go anywhere because of the political culture. Again, it comes back to institutions that have been built. Even now, as you look at Zambia, there are disputes within the PM, but the way the disputes are being handled, they are being handled through the courts of law. Both Mr. Lungu has been to the court of law, Mr. Malsampa has been to the court of law. No one is taking up arms and trying to do things. There are small pockets of little strife here and there, but by and large, they are using institutions that have been built. So where you have strong institutions, you are likely to have effective checks and balances of how to countering abuse of power.
And how do those strong institutions come about? Because in a lot of these dictatorships, the chief executives not only controls the executive, but actually controls the legislature and the judiciary.
That's a very good point. You can have a situation like that where you have a very autocratic, authoritarian type of leader. But definitely at the next set of elections, the people's will should prevail. And we've seen that the change from one-party states to multi-party systems in Africa. Zambia was a model of democracy. 1991, we had a very strong sort of authoritarian system prior to the change of government.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly the people's will prevailed. We brought in President Chiluba under a multi-party system. But he tried to go for a third term, and it was clear the people would not take it. And he knew that. There was no way he was going to go ahead with that.
Thank you. Mariama, please share some more of our audience feedback. Do you have any more feedback to share with our audience, please?
Yes, indeed. Let's move on to a posting from Francis Chinda in Lagos, Nigeria, who writes, "The issues that must be addressed when amending the Constitution are the wishes and the aspiration of the people." And while we're at it, let's take a look at another one, this time from Nicholas Bashasha in Barara, Uganda, who writes, "A constitution is a living document, and it must be amended to match the changing times. Unfortunately, in Africa, it's amended to suit the interest of a few individuals." Shaka?
Very interesting. Let me throw this to you, Eric, in New York.
Yes, that's very true. A constitution is a living document. But when it's going to be amended, as the caller has just suggested, the people must be aware of what the purpose is, and they must participate in the process. That's why we feel that the whole process must be transparent, it must be participatory, so that people know the purpose of the amending the constitution. It's true that amendments must be made, but they should not be made to strengthen the power of the leader and those around him. That's the problem. As my colleague was saying, when you have got strong institutions, it becomes difficult for the leader to do whatever he wants. But you find in some places, as you said yourself, Shaka, that the president is in charge of the judiciary, he controls the legislative assembly, and therefore he puts people in place that are like robots and do whatever he wants. But as time passes, as the social media is developing and people are checking and exchanging information, I think we are going to reach a stage soon where the people, like the people of Zambia, said no and Chiluba was not able to make it. But we should allow room for amendments to be made that accommodate the interests of the people and not the interests of the leader and those around him.
Eric, you know as well as I do that the people are supposed to be the primary stakeholders in any country. But they can only do so, frankly, if they benefit from civic education. You worked for the UNDP, which works very closely with governments around the world. Were there any situations where you were able to share some views about civic education from some of your counterparts in countries where you represented the UN?
Absolutely. One of the functions of UNDP is to conduct civic education relating to good governance, transparency, participation, and accountability. And usually before the elections take place, we have got teams of people that go around and train the people, especially those that are going to conduct elections. So we do that all the time. That is the mandate of UNDP, and we have been doing it. And in many cases, it has helped people to understand their rights. And I think we should continue with that practice as we move into post-2015 development agenda. As you know, for the first time, we have Goal 16 of the Sustainable Development Goals, which is about peaceful societies and inclusive societies. The idea of that Goal 16 is to make sure the people participate in the process and nobody is left behind. So there is awareness. This has been discussed at great length here in New York by member states, by the academia, and above all, by civil society organizations. So I think we are moving in a direction where the leaders will be held to account and will not just change the constitution as they see fit.
Thank you very much. And thanks, of course, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Thanks again to our guests for weighing in on our audience contributions. And just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, Shaka sits down and talks with Mama Sarah Obama about her foundation. She's the Kenyan paternal grandmother of U.S. President Barack Obama. And that's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back, and today's topic is about the urgent need for fundamental constitutional reforms and presidential term limits on the continent. Our distinguished guests are Professor Kenneth Mwenda, Adjunct Professor of Law at American University's Washington College of Law, based here in the nation's capital, and of course an Oxford Rhodes Scholar, and Eric Kashambuzi, a former United Nations senior management official. He is currently a consultant for New York University's Center on International Cooperation. He joins us from the VOA studios at the United Nations. I have to say, Kenneth and Eric, that once again I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
You're most welcome, Shaka.
No, you're most welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome, Eric. Now, Kenneth, you are a lawyer. You obviously know a lot of loopholes in as far as playing about with these constitutions are concerned. You have situations where a dictator will do whatever he wants with the document and say, I have done it legally.
Right.
What about the issue of using the law to undermine democracy? Is there a way we can figure out a way of stopping that? For example, having the international community state it categorically clear, like they have stated it, that if you seize power through a military coup, right, you will get no recognition. Can the international community come around and say, if you change a constitution to benefit you personally and politically, we are not going to recognize your government?
First and foremost, Shaka, under public international law, there are doctrines and principles that deal with recognition of states on the one hand and recognition of government. Mm-hmm. So the law is there. When it comes to issues of military coups, the legal theory and philosophy behind that is that whichever government comes into power, if it has one effective control of the state machinery, mm-hmm, and continues secondly to do so, mm-hmm, then it's a government of the day de facto.
You have to deal with it.
You have no choice. And the difficulty behind this is that it's not only the law, because there are international economic relations in the background. There's trade involvement in the background. So even those who we expect to be leaders of democracy, mm-hmm, they are benefiting from the system. So they cannot really, you know, say if they're, you know, the raw materials are coming from country X, and the leader who's gone into power is one of their cronies who they supported in terms of military coup, what do you expect? We see this a lot. I will not mention, but we have seen a lot of Western interference sometimes in the domestic affairs of African states.
Justified under what they characterize as our vital national security interest.
Exactly. You know, but we won't mention names, but this does happen. But I think the other issue that I would like to highlight is the way some of these laws are drafted. If you look at, for example, even the U.S. 22nd Amendment to the Constitution, I have some reservations about it. It's not a very intelligently drafted provision, if you may ask me. For example, let's assume President Bill Clinton today decided that he wanted to be vice president. Okay, he was president for 2 terms, but it doesn't stop him from being vice president. And then the boss who is his president, for some reason, is not able to finish the term. Can Clinton become acting president?
Of course he can become president.
Eventually.
Fact, I think that even when you look at the U.S. Constitution,
yes,
it is silent,
right,
on whether, in fact, after serving 2 terms,
right,
if there is someone that has come after you,
right,
you may, in fact, come back later, just like Putin did in Russia.
Article 81, Clause 3 of the Russian Constitution, this is precisely what happened, because what the provision says is that a person will not be elected into office after 2 consecutive terms. So, mm-hmm, there was an intervening period when somebody else was president. So sometimes even the way we draft the laws, but to address the questions that were asked in terms of how should we go about amending our constitutions, it's not every amendment to the constitution that requires a referendum. The adoption of the constitution requires wider consultation. There's no doubt about it. But if you are talking of amending a constitution, of course, you have to look at the law that empowers you to amend the procedure. Ideally, Parliament itself should be able to amend the constitution. But when you're adopting a new constitution, that's a different question altogether.
I see. Time is not our best ally. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. US country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
Once again, let's take a look at presidential term limits in Africa. In 2012, voters ousted Senegalese President Abdoulaye Wade as he sought a third term. He had changed the constitution during his first term, which he then argued didn't count against the new two-term limit. In Egypt, voters in a two-stage referendum approved the country's new constitution in December 2012. The constitution limits the president to 2 4-year terms. In Benin, in 2011, the Constitutional Court stated that term limits could not be revised. President Thomas Yayi Boni has promised he will not run for re-election when his second term expires in 2016. In Niger in 2010, a military coup toppled President Mamadou Tandja after he pushed through a constitutional referendum to extend his current mandate and remove term limits.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. Let me come to you, Eric. I know that you are not a lawyer, but you have hung out with lots of them. Are there no specific articles of the Constitution that can, in fact, be entrenched, just like the Bill of Rights, never to be tampered with?
Yes, I think if you look at the 1962 Constitution of Uganda, it made it clear that you cannot change the clauses that created the Buganda institutions, the Kabakaship, the Luchiko, and those related things. And in order to do that, you have to have two-thirds of the members of parliament and two-thirds of the members of the Luchiko. So there are provisions that can be provided to make sure that the president cannot just turn things around as he wishes. And I think these are provisions that should be included in constitutions, that unless there is a compelling reason that must be explained to the people, and the people must understand and consult with their representatives, those should not be tampered with. And I think one of the things that should not be tampered with are term limits, no matter what the president may say. There is one head of state that came to the General Assembly, this past General Assembly debate, and he said his country needs continuity and needs security. The indication he was sending was that his term of office is coming to an end next year or the year after, and he was signaling the international community that he intends to stay in power. I think that is a situation where the people, not only of that country, but of Africa and the people of the United Nations, and indeed the entire international community should send signals that tampering with that constitution to make that president stay in power much longer should not be accepted. And I think we should make it clear to anybody, just as we have made it clear, that if you overthrow a government, nobody will recognize you. Similarly, we should make it clear that if a head of state uses whatever means and changes term limits, they should not be recognized, and he should be forced out either by the people or by other organizations that take constitutions very seriously.
Given that the example you are sharing with us may in fact be a country where people do not have a voice or their voice cannot be heard, could you please be generous enough so that you can name names? Are you in a position to name names so that you can provide a voice to those people, frankly, who have no voice?
Well, I may not be able to provide a name right now, but I think the arrangements that we have within the regions, as you know now, whenever there is a change of government or an attempt to change government, the regions, the governments in the regions put pressure on that government. And what we have seen now in the case of Burkina Faso, the West African community made sure that the military could not stay in power. I can now, if you want me to name names, the president of one of the countries in the Great Lakes region came here and made it clear that his country and his people want continuity. And that's what he said. I haven't conducted any investigation to find out whether this is coming from the people themselves or this is his own creation. But when a head of state comes to the UN and says his country needs continuity and security, I think the message is very clear. He wants to change the constitution and stay in power longer. I think the international community, having heard what he said, should send diplomatic messages discouraging him from changing the constitution.
It is unfortunate that you are thousands away removed from the Great Lakes region. You are safely in New York, and you cannot, frankly, put a face on that voice. There is more than one country in the Great Lakes region. I have heard or even read statements attributed, for example, to Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who in fact has a very generous, you know, arrangement of two terms, each of them 7 years, but he still wants to hang around. I've also heard about Joseph Kabila of the DRC, Denis Sassou Nguesso of the Republic of Congo or Congo Brazzaville. I've even heard about the president of Burundi. So who are you really talking about?
Well, the person I'm talking about who made a statement at the UN is the president of Rwanda. What is surprising is that he's a person who was saying he would not change the constitution to stay in power longer. And in fact, he was criticizing some of the heads of state that were doing that. But when he came to the UN General Assembly and made that statement, I was personally surprised. But he was saying, as I have said, that his country needs continuity, it needs security, and I think the implication was clear that he would want to stay in power a little longer, and therefore he's going to suggest that the constitution be changed so that the term limits can be either extended for a third term or removed completely, as what happened in Uganda. In Uganda, as you recall, we were supposed to change the term limits from 2 terms to 3 terms, but eventually we ended up removing the term limits altogether, and the president can contest as many elections as he wants. And that is absurd, and that's a situation that we should not allow to happen in countries like Rwanda and DRC or elsewhere. Because once we set that precedent, then it becomes difficult to allow one to do it. I want to see how the international community is going to treat these situations, because if you tolerate one, it will be difficult to force another one to step down when you have allowed another one to continue. So we have to set standards, and those standards must be respected by everybody.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Godfrey from South Sudan. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Shaka.
I am terrific. How are you today?
Just point.
What is your question? You have a minute, please.
Yeah, I quote from the Monta of 10th December, where President Museveni said, "I blame people who elect me when I'm supposed to retire." So I completely now can't believe why organs like UNDP still back that government and keep eyes on them without any other locks on such people, because now when you look at Trump's orders, the presence of Congo Brazzaville, could he make an attempt to stand again? Then he's going to face repercussions. Yet you find a country like Uganda is backed by U.S. and they are talking lies always that they are backing human rights. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Uganda. Good evening, Andrew from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Saka. Good evening.
I am Terefik. How are you today?
Good. Saka, democracy presupposes will. And I think Mr. Eric Kasambuza has overstayed in the years and has lost touch with the Ugandan people. I want to tell you, Saka, that every other 5 years, the Ugandan masses go to polls to elect their leaders, to elect the systems on how to be governed. We should not allow situations where constitution or democracies per se deny people choices. Our case in Uganda is that every other year people are allowed to elect. So we
thank you.
You remember in 2003 when the remove of term limits began, very senior members of cabinets, say like Elia Kate Gayab Dan Sari, Maria Matembe, were strongly opposed to.
I'm afraid that time is not our best ally, Andrew, so we'll probably fall through that next time. Andrew has a very interesting point, frankly, except that it may probably sit on the clay because his own president, Yoweri Museveni, in 2001 said he wanted the second and last constitutional allowable term to accomplish three things: to choose a successor, to secure a regional economic market, and to professionalize the army. That was 2001. Wow. This is 2014, and he wants to run in 2 years' time. What does that say?
There are many things, Shaka, that come on board. One, quickly, sometimes, like I said, the cronies around the president make him feel indispensable. Secondly, if the president has committed a lot of atrocities or stepped on too many toes, he's scared of leaving office because he has to deal with the people that he has offended.
Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Professor Kenneth Mwenda, adjunct professor of law at American University's Washington College of Law, and an Oxford scholar, of course, Rhodes Scholar, based here in Washington, D.C., and Eric Kashambuzi, a former United Nations senior management official. He joined us from VOA's United Nations studios. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning on Daybreak Africa, it's Peter Klote sitting in for James Pate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember to keep the African hopes alive.